Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi, everybody. It is one of your hosts, John Wiscott. Did you hear my voice crack when I said, hi, everybody? Sorry. It's John Wiscavige.
And Ben Platt.
What? Oh, my God.
No.
Ben?
I thought maybe that would, like, get people to tune in if we were like, guess who's here today? No. Unfortunately, it's me, the non-equity version of Ben Platt, Matt Cobb.
Bitch, please. I'm actually definitely like the non-equity version of Ben Platt.
Like, no, you're like the first national version of Ben Platt. I'm like, at my best, I'm second national. Like, it's still technically equity, but it's half the set.
That's so kind. Yeah, you have a B set. And it's just one, it's just one panel. And instead of all of the voices of that chorus, it's just Natalie Weiss, that pre-recorded chorus.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
Gotta love Natalie.
We've been away for a little bit. I will once again take the rap for that. I have been in rehearsals out here in Colorado. I just opened the show last week, and then as soon as I opened the show, I actually ran back for a brief 24 hours for one of my best friend's wedding. So I haven't been sleeping. I haven't been, like, drinking enough water. I haven't been moving my muscles in a correct manner. But I'll tell you one thing I've been doing a lot of is eating. I'm gonna, like, when I return back to New York, I'm honestly just gonna be, like, a big, well, too bad Charlie and Chocolate Factory is closing.
Yeah, you'd be perfect for that.
I know.
Well, maybe we can musicalize Death Becomes Her. You'd be like Goldie Hawn in the first 30 minutes of Death Becomes Her.
You know what I would even love more to be in a Goldie Hawn musical of? I would love to be in Overboard. Like, I want that to be a musical yesterday.
Yeah, well, we should be doing that. I was going to say First Wives Club, but they've already tried that like 5 times.
Oh, yeah. What's happening with that? Who knows? Do you know? I don't know.
No one can crack it, you know? Like, I'm you know what I'm waiting for? I think it's going to... So, like, you know how with My Fair Lady, like, everybody in the world at one point tried to musicalize Pygmalion and no one could do it?
I didn't know
like
that.
Like, the whole story
I'm just,
like...
I'm just going to go along and go, yes, I'm aware.
The whole story with My Fair Lady is, like, Rodgers and Hammerstein tried. Betty Comson and Adolph Green tried. Like, everybody tried and no one could do it. And everybody's like, you can't do it. Everyone's failed. And then eventually Lerner and Lowe did it and did it brilliantly. I think that's what's going to happen with First Wives Club. Like... Someone completely out of left field. Like, Dave Malloy is going to come in and fucking rock it. Like no one realized he could do it. And Dave Malloy is going to make First Wives Club the most brilliant Broadway musical we've ever seen. That's what I see happening.
Now that is funny.
This week... I did SoulCycle for the first time in 2 months, so, like, I've been busy.
Tell me, inquiring minds want to know, how is your
team? It was a Taylor Swift ride, 1989 v. Reputation, and I wanted to go up to the instructor and be like, just so you know, I came up with a Taylor Swift musical of All About Eve starring Drag Race contestants, but I figured that might just overshoot the gayness of the class. So I kept
Was it a female or male instructor?
Male instructor, and surprisingly 50-50 class. Like, it was very even. Everyone was in it to win it.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank God. Big. Thank God for SoulCycle. Where would our taints be without it? Less bruised. But where would our souls be?
And on the subject of bruised taints.
Oh.
I'm sorry, I have to. You like?
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Okay. So, let's set the scene, Jean, shall we?
Picture
it. This has been. I think this is like 4 episodes in a row now where we've like brought this up. Ever since Harvey Weinstein broke a couple of weeks ago, more businesses, more names keep coming forward, and as of this recording, we're recording on a Friday. This will be coming out on a Tuesday, though, so a lot of things will happen. A very prominent casting director, Justin Huff from the, like, how would you describe Telsey and Company? It's like the casting, like, godfather. Like,
yeah, it's Telsey and Company is, I would say, like, of all the casting companies, it is the ABC corporation of casting companies. You know, like, it's like, yeah, there's the NBCs and the CBSs, and they're doing just great and amazing too, but like, there's something about Telsey and ABC that just like puts them a little bit above everyone else, and that's absolutely that's yeah, so
yeah they're definitely sort of I don't really know how it happened that they became sort of like the be-all end-all, because it's not as if like they are the only ones who've ever cast shows that are worthwhile. Like, Tara Rubin does Dear Evan Hansen and Lion King and Aladdin and Gardner and what's his face?
I mean, Tara Rubin Carnahan. Does, like, and Carnahan. I mean, Jesus, like,
They do Book of Mormon. Like Telsey does not do all the shows or even like the only good shows. Like, Telsey, sure, like they do Wicked and they do Kinky Boots, but like they've also done like a bunch of shit too, like Big Fish, right. Yeah, like it's, oh no, that I don't think that was them, I think that was Tara Rubin. But point is when the Weinstein news first broke, John, you were very right to point out that, you know, this is not the only thing, it's the tip of the iceberg, not just in Hollywood but in all businesses around the world, and especially in the entertainment business. Broadway, yes. Like, it was only going to be a matter of time until Broadway came under the microscope, casting specifically. I'm sure you've had the same 12 hours that I've had since the news first broke. It's been quite a whirlwind of friends texting and message boards erupting, and
I just want to know who in the acting community knows this many journalists. Like, people out there have the scoop. I have text messages and like screenshots and things that people are sending me directly from like the mouth of the sources. Oh my gosh, I just burped too. What is wrong with me?
I just burped too. That's so crazy. You did that the exact same time.
Twinsies.
We're so in sync.
No, but it's like, yeah, things are about to break in a huge journalistic manner. Or actually, by the time this is aired, things have been broken.
Yeah. By the time this airs, things will have broken. So I don't want to say any. So today there was supposed to be a New York Times article coming out that was sort of the incentive for Justin Huff's firing. And to be fair, he's not the only one that's going to be named in this expose, but he's just the only person that everyone knows for sure is a part of it. A lot of other names are being rumored. I don't want to say who, only because, like, I don't claim to have, like, personal inside scoop. Like, you have your friends who, like, know journalists and all this whatnot. I'm, like, I'm not fancy like that. I don't pretend to know anything. So I don't want to, like, say a name that I've heard only for that to, like, not be the case come Monday. And then everybody listens to the episode and they're like, oh, Matt, like, you brought out your pitchfork and you started, you know, throwing flame to the flame.
To the flamers. I don't know, what's the name of
the
thing?
The stake. Yeah, like, Esmeralda to the stake. What I will say is that, this not just only affects the people that are, who have had to deal with these kind of harassments and the people who are now, being accused and brought to justice for it, but it also affects a lot of other jobs, people who were in contact with all these people. I mean, I know I personally have friends who've been working on projects with directors and choreographers that are about to be named, and like, It's a very confusing time for a lot of people. Like, colleagues that were held into very high esteem for a very long time, now, like, the dark underside to their power is coming forward, and it's throwing a lot of people for a loop.
Yeah, without going into too much detail, I have experienced this in the business. Not so much in the casting director world, but in the world of other people who we work in the business with as actors, you know, directors, we'll just say that. And to be completely honest, I don't know what to say. I was talking to a friend earlier today, and just so everyone knows, it's only like 9 o'clock here, so I've been up for a few hours because like my brain just can't handle what's going on. And basically what I was saying to this friend is that my brain can't handle what's going on. I don't know how to receive all this news, and deal with it with like things from my experiences. I don't know what to do as an artist, as a self-proclaimed comedian, because I don't feel like things are funny anymore. And I'm not pointing the fingers at anyone, like saying like, oh, they're ruining comedy for me. Like, I'm just saying personally, like, everything has gotten so bad and so awful, and I just look at these situations and I hear about them and I get so sad that like I don't know how to react. And so, I mean, I all I can say is I support the victims out there. I hope that they can find healing in this process. And, you know, I was talking to another friend last night, and we were talking about how if anything, I hope this just helps. I hope it does have a good, like, I hope the end is justified. You know, I hope that we can have a future where power isn't abused. I don't know if that's possible. I just don't know. I don't, honestly, I'm like so fucking hopeless. Like, it's everything is just everything's awful right now. And
yeah,
so sorry everyone, I'm gonna be Deborah Downer. Like, it's just
no.
we hear about all these allegations, we hear about everything, we have them happen to ourselves, we've experienced it, and it's terrible and heartbreaking and awful. And then, not to be completely on my political soapbox, but then my brain just has this crazy turnaround of like, but wait, and like an accused sexual predator is leading, quote unquote, leading our country, and like I have family members who still support him, and I'm like, I don't understand. You know, like, here we have like Matt Lauer, who people have always loved way more than Trump, and yes, what he was doing was disgusting. I don't know if you read about that buttoned underneath the desk, but
I read about, like, I absolutely did,
and it's disgusting, and he was fired, and he should be. But it's a huge double standard right now, and we live in the upside down, we live in the topsy-turvy, where I think part of us are beginning to feel like, yeah, we're justified, like, what we're doing is, like, creating action, and it's, or creating a better outcome, but I'm worried, because there still is a huge untouchable, and he's sitting in the Oval Office, and he's orange, and he has hay for hair. And that's my input about it. I don't have much to say other than like I feel completely hopeless and I need to talk to my therapist about it this week.
I honestly do agree with you on all that. First of all, I want to say I originally was trying to make a little light, and then John went ahead and got all deep, and now I feel like a shallow piece of shit. So that said,
sorry, I told you I wasn't going to be the comedic relief today.
It's fine. I agree with you on all of that. A lot of people I've spoken to about this, people I know who have also been victims of harassment. I also should say, as you sat and talked about that for a second, I went back through my head and realized that, like, I have had moments, you know, that weren't aggressive, like a Matt Lauer button under the desk, but like, when I was 18, I interned for a very, very prominent theatrical licensing company, and I was their very first intern ever. And I remember being in the office and like I basically set my own hours because being their first intern, they were like, we don't know what to do with you, so just like make up your own work.
Good luck.
Yeah, they're like, there's literally like all these random things you could do, pick something, you know, make up your own hours. And so I did. And there was one day that I was like actually tasked with something to do. And then they told me like at 1 o'clock that day, it was like a Wednesday, you can actually go home today. I was like, oh, but like, I'm not nearly done. They're like, that's fine. Like, you can come back tomorrow. And I was like very confused and I'm packing up my stuff. And one of my coworkers, one of the people who worked there, said to me that there was a very prominent theatrical producer who I think is a co-partner of this licensing company, something like that. And he was coming in to the office that day. He like doesn't come in very often because he doesn't live in America that much, but he was coming in that day and they wanted me out because apparently like he had a penchant for like, you know, like legal, but very young gentlemen, like a very Kevin Spacey kind of twinkie thing. And they were like, we basically want you out so he doesn't see you. Like, we don't want to deal with that. And I was like, okay. So, like, in one sense, was not technically harassed. But in the other sense, I remember leaving going, like, how many guys has this been a problem for in the past with this producer? So I've always wondered that.
Well, exactly. I mean, if they were saying that with you, it's not like they're like, oh, we have an inkling this might be a thing. That's the other thing, too. I mean, who built that button in Matt Lauer's office and thought like, yeah, oh, this is a good idea. Like it's this huge thing of like, there's been enablers for years too. And it's like, are people enabling because of fear or because of not knowing what to do? Because it's just, I've been obsessed with for a while with this idea of like the study of what happens when something bad is happening and it is not taken care of in the correct manner. And because it just creates this huge like seed and like this well of like lies and deceit and awfulness and more awfulness. And it's crazy because it's exactly what we're watching witness. We're just watching witness these people who like it starts with the sexual harasser, and then you realize, like, oh, there have been enablers, and then you realize, mm-hmm. oh, people have been knowing about this for years, but no one's been talking about it. And it's just, it becomes this huge whirlpool, this cesspool, this whirling cesspool of awfulness. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad that it's finally being taken care of now, but I said it I'll have to say it again. Unfortunately, I feel like this is still just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to like actually dealing with this. There's so much to be done and there's so much to be fixed. And
I mean, I think it's at least important to note that it is actually now starting to be dealt with. I can't, you know, predict what the future holds, but I mean, even 6 months ago, this wasn't, you know, being dealt with. Like, this is a very new development, and for some, like, we have to remember this is only like less than 2 months old, really, from the beginning of the Harvey Weinstein outbreak. Mm-hmm. So I feel like because it's been running so deep and it's been going on for so long, it feels like there's just so much more mountain to climb. But the fact that like we're even a couple hundred feet up, I think is a good way to start. And I think, as you said, like, it's that phrase, like, you know, we've come so far, still have so far to go. Like, we can take a moment to take a breath, take a swig of water, but then we got to keep going. Like, it's, we can't sit around going like, we've done it, we vanquished the villain, like, we found where the bodies are being buried and now we have to properly take care of it.
Busy day, stopped a volcano, kept a town from frying. We found a way.
So let's go lighter by going deeper. And by deeper, I mean deep into the ocean. Because.
Yes. A kind of bikini bottom that is safe to talk about.
Absolutely. I ventured into Bikini Bottom last night and saw SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical.
Tell me everything.
Okay, everything. Well, so first of all, it's like overall, like it is, it's actually surprisingly good.
Yeah, that's what everyone's been saying, and I believe it, and I'm very excited about that.
If I had like one thing to pick apart about it, and it's a big thing, but it's also like not the worst thing in the world. It's just too long.
Oh really? How long is it?
It's two acts. It's 2 hours and 25 minutes with an intermission. And I understand like the need to give Broadway audiences, you know, worth their money and whatnot, but it's a show that like the intermission should be cut, and there's about three songs that could go, and it would be like the tightest hour and 50 minute musical, and it would just be like baller. As it stands, it's got an opening number that's really fantastic, and then act one is kind of airy. Like act one could be tightened by like 10 minutes of just a couple of superfluous songs and some weird pacing issues. But then act two has kind of a stupid opening number, and then after that opening number in act two, the rest of the show is just like great, like really well done entertainment, and it's like so brilliantly designed. Tina Landau is a very imaginative director. The cast is exceptional. Ethan Slater, who plays SpongeBob, not only like just physically does some of the most acrobatic shit I've ever seen, like this side of Spider-Man, but like sings incredibly well, does a spot on SpongeBob impression without making it seem like too much of a cartoon imitation, like put some craft into it. Like it's quite solid, and this might be the first time in history where like if they get nominated for best score, like 30 people are technically nominated for that score.
Oh my gosh, that's true. I've never even thought of that.
Yeah, which is honestly like why I knew. I mean, apparently they did do some cutting in previews. It's like already 15 minutes shorter than it was, but
oh wow.
Like they're not going to cut any songs because, you know, Sarah Bareilles wrote the act 2 opening number, and even though it's stupid, like they want to be able to say with music by Sarah Bareilles. So they're not going to cut that. Which like I get, but at the same time, like if they really wanted to like stick it to all the haters and just make it the most incredible fun show, they would do something like that. But you know, as it stands, it's just like it's just a nice sort of cathartic musical to sort of escape into for 2+ hours.
Yeah, I really want to. I can't wait to see it. I'm hopefully going to see it when I'm back around the holidays. Yeah, people have just been saying it's so wonderful and imaginative, and which is one of the reasons theater exists, you know? Everything is awful right now, so let's go down to Bikini Bottom and have a little bit of a respite from the awfulness.
Totally. And, like, yeah, I mean, I love that we have a season where we can have on one end of the spectrum SpongeBob, which is, like, purely meant to entertain and be fun and does it so well. And then on the other end, we have The Band's Visit, which is, like, you know, also entertaining, but in a much quieter, somber way, but just, you know, just as much craft went into that as well. Like, that's what I appreciate.
Yeah. So I can actually talk about the Band's Visit because I saw that before I left for Colorado. And what a fun little gem of a musical it is. It's just, it's interesting because there is an ensemble, but they don't really do a lot. It feels kind of more like a play with music to me than it does a musical.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Totally, yeah. Well, I mean, because it's... The songs are, like, definitely important in Band's Visit. It is a musical in the sense that, like, the score... Without the score, it would not work nearly as well.
No.
But it is not the kind... Like, there is no real plot, so to speak. Like, you could sum up what happens in the show in, like, three sentences. But so like it's not like the score progresses the plot forward. Like there's no like montage number or anything like that. These like the songs are sort of like little pocket inner monologues, which a lot of ways songs are meant to be in musicals. But they like just kind of float in and out. There's no button. Everything kind of just glides through. I would like to hear a bit more of your reaction to it because I saw it like 2-ish weeks ago, so your memory of it's probably gonna be a little sharper than mine.
Oh no, I've been gone for like 3 weeks. I saw it like 2 weeks ago too.
Okay.
But
never mind then.
I'm okay talking about it.
it was. Sometimes I love pieces of art, of film, of theater, of TV that are an exploration of nothingness. And you'd pretty much agree that not nothingness. I guess the mundane. And
yeah,
and this is a piece that is definitely one of those. And it's great because not a lot of musicals want to take the chance to do that right now. You need to have splashy sets and splashy. That was like almost an exactly SpongeBob reference. They're underwater.
Yeah, that they're underwater.
See, I'm doing really good at the jokes right now because I'm having to explain them too.
But to be fair, even when you have had more coffee than this, you've had to explain your jokes in the past.
Hey. Okay. So, I really enjoyed it. I think it's hard to compare it to some of the other, like, big musicals of the past years, like Hamilton and whatnot, because people are kind of saying, or people are even saying, you know, like, oh, this is kind of maybe the come from away from this year. This could be the underdog. And everyone knows how I feel about Come From Away, but I even feel like that comparison doesn't work really well because these are two completely different stories. There's actually a lot of emotional baggage to both of them, but in very different ways. One, you know, is about 9/11 and a town banding together for the greater good, which, like, even though I didn't care for the musical that much, I was so moved by Come From Away, I cried like 3 times. It's just an amazing story. But this, on the other hand, is completely different because it is just an exercise in what people actually go through on a day-to-day basis. It's, okay, Katrina Lenk, I need to talk about her because
performance. Yes.
So I saw her years ago in a new musical called Cloudlands at South Coast Rep. And I was, all I could think was, who is this woman? Who is she? And then she left that, she closed that show and went right into Spider-Man. And I never saw her in Spider-Man. I never saw Spider-Man. But she's been working since. And she, the best way that I can compare her to anything is that she is either, she is basically that teacher that you had in college, or maybe like at my school, there was a grad program and sometimes the grad students taught classes. She was like that grad student who everyone wanted to take her class or everyone wanted to be around her because everything she does on stage tells a story. She was doing things with her pelvic area that not that she was dancing or gyrating or like being sexy or overtly being sexual. She just, her body was so connected from head to toe that like every inch of her tells a story. And the reason why I think that show is so successful is because of her, because what she does on that stage is the opposite of kind of what we are taught theater should be. When you're in theater school, people always tell you, I remember working on scenes and people being, or teachers asking for more, you need more, you need to highlight the drama. People don't come to the theater to watch the mundane or watch the everyday. They want to see people at the most heightened states of their emotions, which I agree in a lot of ways. But what's become interesting throughout the last few years, through more indie films becoming more popularized, through television influencing the style of musical theater acting, is that things have become a lot lessened. Things have become a lot tinier. And so what I love about the Band's Visit is that it is, yes, it is an exploration of the mundane, but it's the devastation and the emotion of what we actually go through in life. We all have moments of, like, extreme heartbreak that sometimes just go by very quietly, that we don't end up screaming, that we don't end up, like, throwing the, you know, we don't end up like Diana in Next to Normal and throwing the silverware, where it just, it passes and we're quietly devastated about it, and we have our own personal inner emotional reaction that maybe no one else ever sees. And that's what I really liked about this show, because I think it does that so well. It highlights that part of the human experience so well.
I agree with what you say about Katrina. Like, I saw her in Indecent last year. That was the first thing I ever saw her in.
Yes, she in that was also, oh my god.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry. There's some kind of warmth about her that I just love, because I remember I wanted to go see Indecent, and I had heard that Katrina Lank was phenomenal, and I did not know who she was. I did not know what she looked like. And with things like that, I love to kind of watch. And then kind of as I watch, sort of try to figure out which one that person is. Like, I don't look through the playbill. I don't look at the headshots. I'm like, okay, who's the person that I'm supposed to, like, fall in love with? And, Katrina Lank does not really have a moment in Indecent until, like, half an hour into it. And so the first half hour, like, there are these three other women. I'm like, oh, like, yeah, they're all good. I don't know, like, whoever this Katrina Lank person is, I guess, like, is being overpraised. And then she had her scene. I think the first time they ever showed the scene in the rain, the first time they show it, it gets interrupted. But when they first show it, I was like, oh, that's Katrina Lank, because it, you could just tell. And it's the same thing in Band's Visit. Like, it is, it's a combination of the highest form of theatricality and the most mundane of humanity combined in a way that sounds like an oxymoron and doesn't work, but she makes it work. I don't know how
she does. It's
the best I can explain. I understand, like, comparisons to Come From Away, mostly just about, like, you know, locals taking in outsiders. Like, that's the that and a turntable. That's, like, the most I can say that they're connected. But what actually interested me most about Bands is it reminded me a lot of ways in Fun Home. Katrina, like, specifically reminded me a lot of Beth Malone in Fun Home, a performance that is so natural and so human and yet works on the scale of musicals. Because the way the musical theater is technically supposed to work is when you can't speak anymore, when your emotions just run too high, you sing. And when that's too much, you dance. And I think it's important to note that there's not really any dancing in Band's Visit. That's, like, sort of tells you where the emotions weigh in that show. And even when they sing, like, as we said, it kind of floats in and out. So it's like a real human being. Your emotion can, like, run high for, like, a brief period of time, and then it kind of peters out. And before you know it, like, you don't know what you just said or did. And that's sort of what I love about the score of Band's Visit. She's just, it's the kind of performance. I don't know how you felt about La La Land. I know that a lot of artists are divided about it, but I remember seeing it for the first time and thinking, I would love if Emma Stone won the Oscar, because it's the kind of performance that doesn't usually win an Oscar, if that makes sense. Like, usually Oscars go to, like, Meryl Streep in The Iron Lady, or, like, Cate Blanchett in The Aviator. Like, big scenery chewing, like, this is acting with a capital A exclamation point performance. And I sort of feel the same way about Katrina Lank in Band's Visit, where it's like, I would love it. I think she will win. I mean, we don't know what the rest of the season holds, but at the moment, like, it's the kind of performance that doesn't usually win, because it's not like musicals, punch the sky. And for that, I just want her to, like, sweep everything. So
yeah, I agree. I agree about that, that kind of performance that she's giving, and that I would love to see her take that award, or take the Tony Award this year, because her work is amazing. If you get a chance to see it, I can understand the show not being everyone's cup of tea. Most people I've talked to have really enjoyed it, but it is worth it just to watch some amazing acting on stage.
Just like dropped Lang. In acting.
Yeah, just dropped in. I mean, honestly, I wish my... I wish that my pelvis would do half as, like, well with acting as Katrina Lang's.
It's like... It's the kind... I get very annoyed when I talk sometimes to musical theater... Broadway enthusiasts. Young Broadway enthusiasts. So, like, when we had Natalie Walker on, and she's like, like to shit on people's opinions of shows. I like to have conversations. And, like, I will admit, up until, like, 9 months ago, I used to do just that. I would shit on other people's opinions. I'm trying to be better about having conversations, but I do tend to get in conversations with young Broadway enthusiasts. And I'm talking, like, 14, 15-year-olds who, like, reach out to me because, like, you know, I had a newsie on baking it. And they're like, oh, like, tell me about your opinions on Broadway. And I sort of, like, want to sit them down and be like, I love that you're so – that you love Broadway so much. But you need to understand that, like, when you tell me that this performance you just saw – was the greatest acting you ever saw. And, like, we're talking, you know, ninth Glinda replacement in Wicked. And they're, like, the best acting performance I've ever seen. I'm like, okay, like, I'm sure they're wonderful. But, like, I want to expose you to other kinds of acting as well so you can truly understand what that means. Yeah. Like, do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, yes.
How much do I want to show on certain actors? There was an acting performance by a Tony-winning actress last season. She did not win the Tony last season. She had won a Tony previously, but she was in a show last season. And I clocked every single one of her tricks that she did in that performance. And afterwards, a friend of mine was like, that was the most natural performance I've ever seen. And I was like, we saw, like, Christine Nielsen in Vanya, Sonia, Masha, and Spike. Like, we saw Michael Cervis in Fun Home. And, like, this woman, who's a very talented woman, literally just did everything I've ever seen her do in every other show. Like, can we discuss that? I don't know. So something about Katrina, like, just makes me feel so...
And that woman's name is Norm Lewis.
She didn't win a Tony.
No, I know. She didn't. No. And I love
because
her.
Because she checks off all her boxes. I think I cut it last time when I mentioned I was at... therapy and LaShawn's kind of outed Norm Lewis. Oops. That was
fun.
And
you didn't cut it. Maybe I just think about it every day.
I think, yeah, I might have cut it for timing reasons last time, but if we keep this episode short, we'll keep it in.
Well, now it's official. In case it wasn't in the previous episode, everyone, you now know LaShawn's has outed Norm Lewis.
She outed Norm Lewis.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
I'm going to segue, and I actually don't know if this segue is going to work, because I don't know if you've seen it, but I just saw it, and I kind of want to talk about it, and it's a little bit of a departure from what we normally talk about, because we mainly talk about theater. However, there's a gay film out right now, and gay film is just another word for theater. there's a gay film out there called Call Me By Your Name. Have you seen it? I just saw it.
I have not seen it yet. It is number one on my list of things to see. I just saw Lady Bird. That's the most recent Oscar movie I saw.
Yes. Yeah. Lady Bird's next on my list. But when I was home for less than 24 hours for that wedding in New York this past Monday, I was like, what should I do in New York? Of course, see a gay film. It's very... Oh my gosh, why am I so burpy? I'm so sorry, everyone in the podcast world. I literally am the gassiest. Sorry, everybody.
Oh my god.
It's just really interesting. I'd be interested, once you see it, to talk about it. If anyone out there is listening has seen Call Me By Your Name, I want to know... I haven't talked actually to a lot of people who have seen it, and so I want to hear people's opinions about it. I was talking to my therapist last week, and he was asking what I was doing this week, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go see Call Me By Your Name, and he said something very interesting, that a lot of the people in the gay psychology and, like, therapy community are refusing to see it because they consider it quote-unquote gay blackface, since it's two straight actors playing gay. And Jesus. I heard that term, and my butthole just went, I just thought, oh, that is not what we should be calling that. And he agreed. He said that his colleagues are definitely overreacting. And but I didn't realize there had been such a response like that to it with such aggressive language. So I was wondering if you had seen it and what your thoughts were, because I have some very interesting thoughts about it. I enjoyed it a lot. It's a beautiful film, but there's some interesting things. And
I have not seen it yet.
Talking about it now.
So I will say
tangent.
I will say, because it does go back to what we were saying with Andrew Garfield and Angels in America. I am not mad when a straight actor plays a gay character. If anything, there used to be a time when that was career suicide in Hollywood. Playing a gay character was like the end of your career. Now it's sort of like Oscar bait material, but that's brings on itself another slew of questions for me, because then it goes into the whole like putting on a prosthetic nose or pretending you have a limp, like it's your flaw that you're now a gay person, like you're a martyr, you're a victim. And I cannot comment on this movie yet. It does look lovely, and all the reports I've read have said that it is very well done and very I don't know if sensitive is the right word, but very doesn't pander too much or doesn't preach too much. You can maybe shine some more light on that for me if you could. I don't know, like I would love it if there were more opportunities for gay actors. I don't love the idea that only gay actors can play gay roles. I think, of course,
I think that's a weird, dangerous thing.
Yeah, I would say I think that every role has its own burdens, and like, yeah, I mean, I've seen some gay actors play convincing straight men, and straight men play convincing gay men. For example, you don't watch Younger, do you? Did you ever watch Younger?
I don't know.
Okay, I mean, I'm not trying to promote it, although I absolutely would if I had a platform. Wait, really?
No. You would just, everyone should assume that I would watch a show with Sutton Foster and Hilary Duff, but for some reason I've just never gotten on that train. But
and all the chunky necklaces that Miriam Shore wears alone is like
chunky necklaces.
She wears every kind of chunky necklace you can imagine. Point is, the first two seasons, Hilary Duff has a boyfriend/fiance who's like a total Wall Street douche, and I found out recently that the actor is actually gay. And the only reason I found out was because I was stalking him on Instagram the other day and found he posted a photo of him and his now husband from their wedding from a few weeks ago. And, I mean, I would never have known. And, I mean, now that I know that he's gay, I still look at the performance and I don't think, oh, you know, where are the clues, where are the hints? Like, he's just a very good actor. And he was able to successfully play that kind of role. I don't mind it. I think that it's easy to say, you know, we need more gay actors playing these roles, but at the same time, like, being an openly gay actor is really just like a new thing. Being an openly gay successful actor is still very new, so to have as many successful ones as we do is encouraging, but it's not like we have like this giant roster of A-list Hollywood names that can go into Call Me By Your Name, if that makes sense.
No, totally. I'll be very intrigued. I don't want to say too much more about it, of my opinion, until you see it, because I just want to see if you had the same reaction. I think it's beautiful done. It's a beautiful film. It's an interesting story, because it kind of, in a weird way, is almost the reverse of everything that's going on, because it's about a young, I mean, he's on the cusp of adulthood. He is considered an adult, but I think he's 17 in the film, and, I mean, It's a tryst, a romantic relationship with, I believe the character's supposed to be like 26, so someone about 9 years older. So it's interesting, because in light of everything that's going on, you look at that situation and you think, oh, should we be celebrating this story? But see it, and then I want to talk about it. We're gonna treat Call Me By Your Name like a piece of theater, because, I got my tickets at TKTS for it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go on TDF tonight and see what I can find.
TDF.
Gosh. Yeah. No, I'm very excited to see it. I will say, I'm also interested to hear your thoughts on Lady Bird when you do see it. There is a giant Sondheim chunk in the movie that I was not expecting. So I'll just, yeah. They do a school musical, and there is an audition sequence, and they don't tell you what the musical they're auditioning for is right out. They tell you later on, but so as you're watching the auditions, you're like, why is everyone singing Sondheim? Like, this is supposed to be like Sacramento in 2002. Why in a Catholic school? Why is everybody singing Sondheim? But then you find out why. But watching Saoirse Ronan like slightly sing Everybody Says Don't slightly off key, but like with Elaine Stritch gusto, is like my choice for gayest moment of 2017 cinema.
Wow, gayer than Call Me By Your Name. Who knew?
Oh, yeah. She's like, everybody says don't. Everybody says don't. Everybody says don't walk on the grass. I was like, ah, Oscar.
I was listening to the Barbra Streisand version of that song last night, in case anyone has ever wondered about my sexuality, which I do keep very under wraps.
Yes, we're very secretive about these sort of things.
Yeah, I am. Wow, we've just... It's very interesting. This podcast started out as something very different. I think in both of our minds, and I think we've also dealt with a lot of things with both of us traveling. We're doing this, you know, once again in two different time zones. It's very interesting because we started at the bottom. Now we're here.
Did you just say we started as bottoms? Now we're here.
No, sweetie. Because I started as a top. Because I was young and unafraid, and dreams were made and choosed in brick tent.
Oh my god! I think it is very fitting, though, that by the way, the music we use as our transition music, like when we just like abruptly transition to the next thing, is Patti LuPone singing "You're the Top." So,
wow!
Yeah, there we go.
It's just very interesting. I'm very grateful for this podcast. I'm very grateful that we even have a few people who listen to our rants about what's going on in the theater community. I hope that people realize why it is important to talk about, and why we do keep talking about it, and why as the news keeps rolling on. Because sometimes in my mind, I was having the thought, I was thinking, are we beating a dead horse? Is this another episode where Matt and I kind of like chew out didactic thoughts about, and yes, didactic is my word of the day on the calendar. Like thoughts about sexual harassment, which, I mean, you and I have very pretty much standard thoughts on sexual harassment, in that it is in that big red bubble of no. But the thing is that it's been going on for so long. It's running so rampant. And the thing that we're realizing is that people have been, there's been knowledge about all of these things. It's just that no one's talking about it. And so even if you feel like your opinion is already stated, or it's already been heard, or your experience has already, someone has already had an experience similar to yours, and they've already talked about it, and maybe theirs is quote unquote worse, and so yours is less important, or yours is less meaningful to the conversation. It's not, you know, it's everyone's experience is important, and I think everyone should feel that they can be heard and will be heard and should be heard. So I don't know what was in my coffee today, why I turned into like an actual adult. Like, today's the first day of my life I feel 29 years old.
Ben Stein today.
Exactly. I feel like I've been faking it and just like bopping around like a teenager in an old decrepit body for the last few years. But I hope that as things continue to develop, which by the time this podcast airs, a lot of shit's gonna get developed.
Yep.
I hope that we just keep inching closer to a better future. And with that, I say,
Billy, I'm back to take everybody out.
I agree 100% with you on that, John. It's important to be able to feel safe and protected and be heard and, you know, talk about these things. I also think it's important to laugh from time to time. So, you know, if you want to just, like, I feel like, but now as we've been recording these, I should start every episode to be like, if you just want to laugh, start at 1632. If you want to hear like in-depth conversations, start at 000. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I agree with you. This, we definitely had a plan for how this podcast was going to go. Like, we had segments, we had sections, and we still do that a bit, but it's definitely, I feel like now is sort of, the world is going through this big shift. So are we with this podcast. And I'm not mad about it. We're sort of like naturally leaning into what feels right for us in this podcast.
I mean, I woke up this morning and like I woke up to a pair of half-rimmed glasses automatically sitting on my face, and I was wearing a wool sweater vest, and I felt more informed, and I felt
I went to bed with a half mug of tea beside me and an open copy of the script, the Torch Song Trilogy, so like
I went to bed with the help of Patina Miller. Patina Miller is what my best friend and I named my vape pen here in Colorado, because it's legal here, people. So I only do things that are legal. So
only that.
Yes, Patina Miller is very good to me out here.
I love that you named it Patina Miller.
I was trying to think of like any name. I first was like, I think I'm going to name her Patina, and then my best friend was like, no. Patina Miller, and I was like, okay, like how the rest of Broadway was about her. They were like Patina Miller, and the rest of us were like, oh yeah, okay,
yeah, I suppose, sure,
sure, yeah, great, cool. Yeah,
great, amazing. Well, on that note, speaking of things that we name after great dames, my phone, which I named Sigourney Weaver a long time ago, is informing me that we should probably start wrapping things up.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah,
I have to catch a yoga class in a little bit.
And I got to get to another soul cycle. I'm just so busy.
Seriously, though, praying for your taint, which I know you're going to want to make that the title of this episode. Maybe with some of the topics, we should have make it praying for your taint. Or maybe.
Or call me by your taint.
Call me by your taint. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Let me tell you, though. There is all I'm going to say, my final thoughts on Call Me By Your Name is there is a scene with a peach in this.
Everyone's talking about the fucking peaches in this movie.
Have other people told you about the peach scene?
No one's told me what about the peaches. Everyone, all I just see is like, Call Me By Your Name. Oh my God, the peaches.
There is this scene that I, as an adult male, I have maybe like watched a film that has maybe been on the more pornographic side, like maybe once or twice, like in a very like controlled setting, you know. Mm-hmm. There is a scene in this movie with the peach where my jaw was on the floor and I was like, oh, can they show? yeah. So if nothing else, go for the peach scene.
I will. I will absolutely go. I look forward to it.
Yeah.
You know what, John? Okay, so for today's episode, because of just like everything we've been talking about and the need to sort of just let go and say fuck it to the world, I would like to pick this week's diva, if that's all right.
Go for it.
All right, so since we last recorded, I randomly experimented with Jerry Springer, the opera.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Have you like ever listen to it, or
I've listened to a few songs from it. I know that what's that one that I just want to dance.
Yep, that's what I'm going to be picking today.
Yes,
yeah. I will say so. Like the first act, it's all like Jerry Springer act, and the music's actually quite phenomenal. Really great choral work. But yeah, there's this one song.
It's really fun.
By this one character who's like an overweight housewife from the South, and she just wants to be a pole dancer. She just like wants to let loose. And this is all she wants to do. And Allison Geer sings it, and she's just absolutely wonderful. So that is what I will be playing for us tonight. This is Allison Geer from Jerry Springer the Opera, Or her pop single. I'm not sure which version I want to play yet, but this is her singing I Just Wanna Fucking Dance.
Yas.
Yas. So, until next time, I am second national tour version Ben Platt, a.k.a. Matt Koplik.
And I am first national tour Ben Platt, and proud of it, John Waskavage.
Yes. That's right. You play the Amundsen Theater in L.A.
Mm, cannot wait.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to play, like, the Fox Theater in St. Louis.
Oh, if you're lucky, bitch.
I feel like our one, like, 1 5-day sit-down.
Oh, God. Okay, everybody.
All right. Goodbye, everybody. This has been Broadway Breakdown.
And try to stay sane. And let's just dance.
Just fucking dance. Take us out, Allie. Let's just fucking dance.
Dance.
I want to do some living, because I've done enough dying. I just want to dance. I just want to fucking
they say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.